I'm going to start on the top of Perchet Amud Aleph. Chatmu Aedim, the Rosh Hadad. So this is a discussion in the Mishnah. We had a series of different signatures where there were multiple Gitin involved. And the question is, which get was kosher, which were the Aedim assigned with? So Mar is going to know discuss this now. So if they, Chatmu Aedim, Rosh Hadad, they were assigned on the top of the page, that it's not a valid get. Gini, is that really true? Varav Chatim in a Tzad. Right, doesn't Rav sign on the side? I mean, that he signed on the side of a document. Hatam b'shagago kalpi akhtav. That's only when the head of the writing is against the writing itself. So now, what happens, for instance, if you have a document like your Gemara, if you look at your Gemara here, depending if you were to sign in this direction, which is that if you read it, for instance, you had some writing here that was landscaped against your Gemara, then the possibility was that the writing was the bottom of the get coming from this direction. Whereas if it was signed in this direction, right, it was clear that it's referencing this area here because there could be nothing written above it. So that's why when you sign on the side, that's when it's good, when you write on the side, and the head of the writing, the top of the letters, are towards the writing. I mean, that's on a, say if you're writing as a portrait, there's a landscape signature whose top is towards the portrait side. So where it says, Ella Hadiktani, Heikifu Shoshzeh, B'tzad Rosho Shoshzeh. Well, it's okay to write on the side or on the top, but it really depends which direction the signature is in. Then we had before a case in the Gemara where you had two Gitin that were head against head, and that they looked like this, right? And then the Adim signed between them. Well, the Adim signed between them, and one of them has a Dago Shomala. So if they sign in this direction, obviously for this get, it's not valid because, right, that could be the bottom of another get. It's not this. But if it's Dago Shomala, then it should be good for this get because the Adim are signed with the head of the letters facing the get on the other side. That should be a valid get. Again, if you have two Gitin head on head towards each other, Adim signed in the middle, direction of one of the Gitin, then whichever side that the top of the letters matches the top of the get, that should be a valid get according to the way Rav is explaining. Let's look at which one of them goes with the writing. Let's cash them, and then it should be okay. So the Gemara says, Hatam Dharami Leki Ivra. They made it like a bridge. So what does that mean? It means that again, if you have two Gitin, right, that are that are facing, for instance, in a portrait direction, like this, you have two Gitin like that, then the Adim signed, right, on a landscape basis, they signed like this. They created a bridge, right, between these two Gitin. You have one Gitin going downward on the portrait side, one Gitin going up on the portrait side, and then on a landscape basis, they signed in between. So it looks like a bridge. This empty space in the middle is like they signed across the space like a bridge between the two Gitin. Yeah, okay. I mean, the Gemara's going to go back on all this in a second. Yeah, okay. Right, so then, if that's the case, how are you going to explain this case? You know, the next case in the Gemara is where you have a single document that has two Gitin written one after the other, and then the Edim are signed in between the Gitin, right? The Edim are signed over here. Now, we just explained what did the Edim do when they signed it. They didn't sign like this, but rather they signed like this. So how are you going to explain that which get is kosher in this case? Before, when we said they signed in the same direction as the get, then you could say the top get was valid because they signed below the top get, and the bottom get was invalid because they signed above that get. But now that we've changed the explanation in our Mishnah, when we have multiple Gitin, the way they signed was, meaning for instance, the Gitin were portrait, they signed landscape, or if it was landscape, they signed portrait, meaning they signed against the direction of the perpendicular, that's probably the right word, they were perpendicular to the get, then it's not read with either get. So how do you explain that next piece in the Mishnah? Whichever one the Edom are read with is kasher. Well, the Edom aren't read with either get now, because it's now in a different direction than either of the Gitin. If it's signed in this manner that's perpendicular to the two Gitin, the signature of the Edom has no relationship to the get itself. So now the Gemara reverses all of that, which is saying that Rav's signature was not made a diski. We've seen diski actually earlier in the Masechta, but a diski is basically a tzavah, a court document, which goes out to say, invite somebody to come to din, or a thing. So basically they have a document that says you are invited to come to the court for this and this, you know, offense, or for this date for a hearing. And then Rabban used to sign anywhere on the document. He used to sign the side, the top, anywhere on the document, because it wasn't, from a contractual standpoint, it wasn't valid, it wasn't relevant to where Rab signed. All it was that Rab kind of put his stamp on it to say, yes, I approve of this, and this is, I'm the one who's inviting you to the din. So in that case, we don't worry about where he signed. In our Mishnah, we are talking about, our Mishnah is talking about a document, a contract, or a get. In the instance where we're talking about a contract or a get, right, then the edim, the only time the edim are going to be kashem is if the edim are signed below the get, right, in the direction that the get is going. Not from the sides, not from above, none of those will be considered gitin kshirim, or the edim will be considered to have signed on that get. Now, the next line in the Mishnah, which is something we've seen actually twice already in the Masechta, which is that Ktav Sofer Be'ed Kasher, that it was the handwriting of the Sofer, and one aid, then it's a kosher get. So now Amar of Yirmiyah says about this, Chatam Sofer Shaninu, that not only is it that we have the handwriting of the get, but the Sofer also signed on the get. So we have a Sofer who wrote a get, he signed on it, and then we have an additional aid who signed on the get. Now this was Rav's position, which is a couple of days ago. That's Rav's position about how to explain our Mishnah over here. He explains our Mishnah like Rav Yirmiyah, right, that we're talking about a Chatam Sofer Shanina, that we're talking about where they signed on, where the Sofer actually signed on it, as opposed to the Mishnah of Shlosha Gidin Tzulin, right, there are Tzulin L'Chatapila, but the other, the Vlad is Kosher, over there Rav says 1 aid means literally 1 aid, as opposed to over here where we have 2 aid. Shmuel, on the other hand, explained the Mishnah that in both cases there was only 1 aid who signed on it. What was the difference between this Mishnah and the Mishnah back there was whether the Sofer was a Mufak or not. Over here the Sofer is a Mufak, so he wouldn't write without the husband's instructing him to. As the Sofer and the other, again, it was not a Mufak, it wasn't a well-established, he didn't know the law so well, so we can't rely on him only to write unless the husband instructed him. So Amar of Pista, Hamani. So who's the author of Mishnah? That is Rabbi Yossi. What's the opinion of Rabbi Yossi? So again, this is the other place we saw it. It's above when we saw this originally, this sugya. This is Rabbi Yossi who says, Mile lo mimsurim l'shlichayu, that words or instructions cannot be given over to a shliach. You can only give over ma'asim, actions to be taken by shliach, but you can't give instructions to a shliach. Why is that important? That's important so that lo nafik mine kurva, so we don't have a very difficult situation come out of it. And what's that? That if the Baal, the husband, went ahead and instructed two Aiden to say, go get a Sofer to write it, and then get these two people to sign on it. So the two Aiden go, they tell the Sofer, go ahead and write it, and they're going to say, you know what, he's going to be embarrassed if we don't have him sign it. Let the Sofer sign on it, and we'll get one of the other Aiden to sign on it. So now what do you have? You have a huge issue because he didn't follow the instructions of the Baal, so the get is not a valid get, right? And we have a Sofer, we're relying on the signature of a Sofer, which we're not sure if the husband really instructed that, or the Sofer himself, they ate him, who were given those instructions, told him to do it because they thought he'd be embarrassed. But then, if you hold a Rabbi Yossi, this problem will never come up. Why not? Because Mile lo mimsram l'shukayu. You can't give over instructions to shlichim. So if that's the case, the Baal can never tell other people to go and instruct the Sofer to write and instruct other Aiden to sign. They'll have to tell him, you write the get, or you sign on the get. And the Baal gives directed instructions. In that case, you don't have this problem. So he'll be the author of this Mishnah, and therefore we will not have a problem when we have Chatam Sofer, when the Sofer signed on it, and his another Aid is signed on it. So hi Ketubat Chatanim. So there was a Ketubah that came to Atila Kameter Chavo, Javiyalei the Tofsa, Atimat Yidat Chatzata. He knew the handwriting of one of the Sofer, right, that who wrote whatever the Tofas was of the Ketubah, and the signature of one of the Aidim. Sabalach Shura. He wanted to go ahead and make it a kosher ksuba based on that. Some of the Revirmiyah Chatam Sofer Shanino. Wait a minute. When you're relying on this Mishnah that says that it's the top of this, it's the Sofer and the Eid Kosher, that doesn't just mean you recognize the handwriting of the Sofer. It means that the Sofer actually signed on the get, or here in our case, the ketubah, right? And here there's no signature of the ketubah. So even though you recognize the handwriting of the Sofer and your 1 aid, that's not sufficient to be matched here, this document, to this ketubah. So you need actually the chatimah of the Sofer, which we don't have over here, because we have the Sofer wrote it and two different aid. He recognized the handwriting of the Sofer and one of the aid. That's not sufficient, because you actually need the Sofer's handwriting over here. Okay, now the last, one of the last things in the Mishnah was Hatif Chanichato V'Chanichata Kasher. Okay, if he writes the nickname, his nickname or her nickname, it's kosher. So the way Rashi learns this part of the Mishnah, Rashi says that this part of the Mishnah is referencing the requirement that you can't, you have to write the husband's name and the woman's name in the get. And if you change Shinashmo, if you change the name of the husband or the woman, then it's an invalid get. So Rashi says that there, if you wrote a Chanichal or a Chanichata, that it works. And what is Chanichato, Chanichata? So that's what the Gemara is going to ask. And then we'll come back and discuss the alternative shot. Tanurbanan, Chanichato, Chanichata. A vote. Beginning ad yudorot. So what is a chanicha? A chanicha is a family name. But if instead of using your personal name, they use like a family type of description, a family name or a family nickname that was associated, you know, the house of, I don't know what you call it, the house of, right, the house of Usher, right, the house of something, so that the description of the individual is not necessarily his name or his father's name, but is rather his father, his family. And therefore, you can use it now. So where it says, "Chanichata vod b'gdin ad yudorot," that you can go back 10 generations. That a chanicha, that one is still qualified or classified within a family name within the first 10 generations. Shem ben Elazar mer gimel dorot. 3 generations is it kosher. Mikamela kosul, but after 3 generations, it's not. Keman has lahad amar rebchanina. Where does this go? Like that, chanichata vod b'gdin ad gimel dorot. Keman. That's kai Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Right. That's like Shem ben Elazar. Amar huna mai kara. What's the pasuk? Pasuk says, Kitolid Banim Uvene Banim Vinoshantim. So Kitolid is 1 generation, Banim is the 2nd generation, Vivanim is the 3rd generation, Vinoshantim. After that point it gets too old in that it's no longer the proper, the term or the name is no longer associated with that family, and it's like a restart already at that point.
But nowadays when the name is associated generation after generation after generation, would each generation be a reset?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a family name, but we generally say, we put the person's name, Ben, we define them by the person, their father's name, which is sufficient, and then we add in their last name, which is also an additional. Just in this last name, I don't know if it would be sufficient according to this Gemara, unless you say that today we don't have this thing where the name, as opposed to over here where it says, like, say, House of Asher. House of Asher was someone's name in the family, then became the family name. As opposed to your last name, which is a name that's not, it was nobody, it was never anybody's first name that's the house name. It's a family name that's associated with each individual in the family. It may not be, I'm suggesting that maybe it's different than Hanichah, which is taking somebody's name. So maybe if you go back 3 generations, that person's name is still relevant to the family.
But like,
Right. Wait, Rashi learns it. Now, the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rabbeinu Hanan will actually change the placement of this in our Mishnah. And then they actually move it. If you look over in the Tosfos, right, there was a line in the Mishnah that says, "Kach nikiya dat b'Yerushalayim kotbim." That's the way the people in Yerushalayim used to do it. So the way Rashi read that in the Mishnah was that when they wrote Plony ben Plony, that's how they used to sign their Gitin as Plony ben Plony, and that's what they did. But now, if you switch the order in the Mishnah, and this is what Tosfos says, if you look over here, there's a Tosfos, "Kach nikiya dat b'Yerushalayim kotbim al ish Plony ben Plony." But Beinu Chanan, that's Rashi's explanation. They only used to write their nicknames or their father's nicknames. It's not talking about the person, the man's nickname. So Chanicha is not her nickname or his nickname. Chanichata means the name, the family name. So he wrote Chanichato, his name, and his family's name. That's how they used to sign it. That's Kachayuniki. That's how they used to sign it. Because according to Rashi, the part of the Kiyah Dat Yerushalayim, they used to sign it, they used to go on the first part of the Mishnah, which says that they used to sign it as Reuven ben Yaakov. And that's what the people in Yerushalayim did. And Chanichato and Chanichata references the Torah of the get, which is that the name of the man and the woman who are getting divorced. That's the way Rashi learns it. The Rabbeinu Hanan and Rabbeinu Tam changed the order of the Mishnah and say, no, Chanichato and Chanichata follows the rest of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is talking about Eden. It's not talking about the Torah of the get, the man and the woman in the get. It's talking about the Eden. And so too, Chanichato and Chanichata is also referencing the Eden, that they used to sign their name and their father's family name. Right. No, oh, because the Mishpacha. That's what Tosa says. Hani Kata is a reference to the Mishpacha, and Hani Kato is a reference to him. So that's why the female is not referencing the individuals who are involved in the get, but rather the family and the person himself. So that's why it's Hani Kato, and Hani Kata is Hani Kata Shalom Mishpacha. Right? And then after that, it's Kach Miki Adat, the Yerushalmi was saying. And that's what they used to do. They used to sign that way, which is they would sign their name in their family association, which was, again, up to 3 generations or 10 generations that they were associated with some patriarchal figure who became the name of the family. Move on. There's a little Gadita here. I'm Rabbi Shu ben Levi lo charba Eretz Yisrael ad she'avduba zayin batei dinim avodah zarah. The Eretz Yisrael was only destroyed after 7 batei dinim. Batei dinim over here, it doesn't necessarily mean courts. Make courts in the sense of court, like a court of law, but courts in the sense of a king's court. Right? So the royal courts. Right? So until 7 generations of kings worshipped avodah zarah, that's when they Elohim, who are they? So these are the kings of Israel, not of Yehuda. Yerubam ben Nebat, Ubasha ben Akia, Akab ben Imri, Yehu ben Nimshi, Pep ben Ramalia, Nakam ben Gadi, Yoshea ben Allah. Those are the 7 kings that worship avodah zarah. Shenemar, and you bring a proof from the pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Ublala Yoledet, the one who could not have children, bore children, Hashipa, 7 children. Right? Nafcha Nafsha, her soul was distraught. Bashim Shaba Ojumam, the sun set for her when it was still day. Bosha, she was embarrassed, and she was disgusted. So that's, what does that mean? So after 7 generations of giving birth, I mean, of doing this avodah zarah, finally the embarrassment and all the punishment came true. Now the truth is that there are more than seven kings of Israel. So it's a very important Rashi over here. If you look in the Rashi, Zayin Bati Dinim, right, that it says, Zayin Mishpachot Shemalachim Bimalchei Yisrael. 7 of the king families of Malchei Yisrael. V'hanach the Malchei Yehuda lo chashiv. 1 of Yehuda, they don't count. Why? Sheyubahem She'eluf, that were, you know, at the same, they were simultaneously ruling over Yehuda. Or it could be in Akbar. Why? Hamelech u'bno ben b'no. They're considered like one court. The king, his son, and his grandson. Chomachim shekomu mizaruach harav kari chad ben din. Each family lineage is considered one court of the kingdom. So since the Yehuda always was the lineage of David, it was always considered one court. In Israel, the kingdom turned over. I mean, that there were different families, that it wasn't a straight lineage. They were turned over, the kings turned over, and it was a new family each time that the new king came about. Shalom ben Yabesh, v'zechariah lo kachashim. Oh, what about these other kings I didn't mention? L'fish lo malchu shana, shlema. Because they didn't rule for a whole year. Chen Zimri, and then also Zimri. About Imri, Aviv shel Achav. Well, we did have Imri and Achav, who were 2 generations of one family. Why weren't they mentioned? Hashem b'tino shel Achav b'kra. Right? So they were one unit, because they were the same family. But why didn't they mention Zimri instead of Achav, who was first, right? His father was first, not Achav. So Rashi says, because Achav, Yeshua, Vasot, Yoter, since Achav was such a bad guy, then he's known, so well known, that they mentioned both of them under Achav's name and not under Zimri's name. So again, the 7 courts is the 7 kings of Israel, okay, that ruled more than a year, that were independent, right? Kingdom, kingships, or courts, king's courts, and they would worship the avodah zarah, and that's what caused the falling of Israel, because we know that in the time of Hoshea ben Allah, the Melech Ashur comes and exiles the people, which is the next part of the Gadita. Number of Ami Maikara, what's the pasuk? It says, Ki Tolid. Tolid is 2. Banim is another. Ki Tolid is 1. I'm sorry. Banim is 2. Ubnei. Banim is another 6. So that's 7 generations. And Oshantim Baret. And then you'll be Obey to Obeydun. You'll be knocked out of the land. So those are the 7 generations that got knocked out of Eretz Yisrael from the kings of Israel. So I'm really kind of Rav Asi L'Rab. See, maybe Hoshea ben Allah. Hoshea ben Allah is the last king of Israel. It says, Vayasa Rabbi Hashem, Rak Lokam Malchei Yisrael. That he did bad in the eyes of Hashem, but not as bad as all the kings that preceded him. Then it says, Steve, right afterwards, it says, Allah, Allah, Shalmaneser. Then the king of Ashur comes and conquers him, subjugates him, and then he eventually rebels against him, and that's what ends to the Galus, to Ashur of the Aseret HaShvatim. But look, he did better than everybody else, and then he ends up going to Galus. He's the one who gets into trouble. Why does he get into trouble if he was doing better than everybody else? So I'm of the Otan, Partisiot, Shoshivi, Rabbam, so remember, in the time of Rabbi Ben Avad set up Shomrim, guards on the way, so that the people of Israel could not go back to the Mikdash in Yehuda, and that he would force them to stay within Israel, so they wouldn't go and see the kings of Yehuda, and either rebel and go back and join the kings of Yehuda, see that the kings of Yehuda had a higher standing. So Bitlan. So Shein Ben Allah, what did he do that was better than the other kings? He got rid of these north and the west. He said people could go back up to Yerushalayim and go to the Mikdash again. Bapa became Loai Lo Yisrael the Regal, and despite that, the Jews did not go back to the Regal. So Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu Otonu Shanim Shlo Alu Yisrael the Regal Yelchu B'Shevi. Those years that they didn't go up, all these years. So what do you could say? Until this point, the excuse was, why didn't they go up to the regular Yerushalayim? Because there were guards on the way. But after he removes the guards, and they still don't go up, that's Mare Makom on the rest of the, right? That's Mare Makom on the rest of the years that they wouldn't have gone anyway. It had nothing to do with the guards. I think probably in the beginning it did, but later on, they're going. So Hashem punishes them for the whole thing. So this is, while we're in the Seres Mechubal, it's definitely that when Musa Askel, that a person has to do things in life, a person's busy, has a family, has work, and these aren't things that, a person can't pass on. But a person has free time. And what a person uses his free time for, right, is Mare, and what he would do if he didn't have these other burdens, if he didn't have these other obligations. So a person is free time, right, goes ahead and learns and does mitzvahs, Torah mitzvahs, Hashem could say, well, if he had more free time, that's what he would do also, he'd do more Torah mitzvahs. So if a person takes his free time, his free time, he just lets it roll away, does nothing with his free time, then Hashem could say, well, if I gave him more free time, what am I going to assign to that? So that's important to take advantage of those moments when we're not under those obligations to learn Torah to mitzvot, so that it's Mara to Hashem that we, that what we would do if we had more free time. So Amar of Kista, Amar Magbukov, Amri Lo Amar of Kista, Amar of Yirmiya, Dorish Mermaimar, Maite Chtiba, Yiskor Hashem al Ra, Viviyah Aleinu. Hashem, saw the good bad, and he put it on us. Ki Tzadik Hashem Alokeinu, because Hashem's a Tzadik. So he brought the bad on us. Hashem's a Tzadik, Hashem Alokeinu, Yiskor Hashem al Ra, Viviyah Aleinu. I mean, just because Hashem's a Tzadik, he brought all this bad on us? What's the correlation or connection, right, between the beginning and the end of the pasuk? Now let's talk. When the Migdash is destroyed and the Galus of Yechaniah happens, there was already 11 years before that there was the Galus of Yechaniah. The Galus of Yechaniah sent most of the Talmidei Chachamim and leaders of Klal already into Galus. So they already established the Batei Midrash and they established the community in Babel so that when the Galus of Yechaniah came, they were able to join that Galus that existed there and learn Torah and be again immersed in Torah that was already established from beforehand. Harash v'masger elif. Right, so it says that the harash and masger were 1,000 that were sent. Harash, what's harash? Shemeshash v'tchim, that's what called harishim. When they start to speak, everybody was silent.
Which goes came first?
Yechonia.
Okay, so they established the
praying the ground from when Sipio at the time of the destruction of the Mikdash 11 years later. All right, Kocharashim Masger, Kevich Sobrim, Shuvein and Potchim. When they close the halakha, nobody can open it anymore. And that these were tremendous Talmidei Chachamim that already went into Golus. The time of Yechonia and they're still there when the Golus Sipio comes, and they're able to help them and to be Yasei Torah. Come on, how many of them? Oh, 1,000 of them. Ulamar Shiftim Shishanim Noshantim. So this is the gematria of Noshantim is. Right, 852 years. It says that Avot Tavidun, after 852 years, when you're on the land, then you'll be wiped out entirely. So Hashem was marking the ghost after 850 years instead of 852 years to protect themselves having to go into becoming total destruction. He sent them to ghost, and that's what protected them because they went in earlier than the Bid of Shantan. Now the Gemara has an interesting conclusion to this. Amar Avakar by Yaakov, Shramina Mehira, because the Pasuk says, Tijoli Banim Banim No Shantan Ba'aretz. Right, and it says, Obeidu, Tovidun, Mehira, then you will be, right, wiped out quickly from the land. So that's how we come down. Mehira is a Mariyama. What's a fast for a Kodesh Baruch Hu? Tamayama comes to Mitarte. 852 years is what's considered quick for Hashem. And you will quickly be wiped off the land is after 852 years, is what Hashem predicts. So that's fast for a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Within human terms, that's an extreme, a huge amount of time. For Kodesh Baruch Hu, that's fast. I mean, that Hashem's perspective on time and the world is very different than ours. Right, now, next Mishnah is a very, very fundamental Mishnah, a very important Mishnah, and hopefully we'll get to the Rambam on this again, because the Rambam is extremely important, and because, again, it's Mr. Askel during the Aseres Yemei. Get mi'usav Yisrael kasher. A get that is forced, a husband is forced to give a get through a Jewish court, is kasher. Uvdei kochabim, but if it's done by non-Jews, pasul, then it's pasul. Uba uvdei kochabim chuktim oto, but if a non-Jew is hitting him and saying, Asim Ash Yisrael Omrim Lecha, do what, whatever the Jews tell you, then it's also kasher. Again, that's a good get in the sense that the Ovid Chacham is not telling to do, do what the Ovid Chacham is telling, but rather do what the Jews tell you, do what the Jewish court is doing. So he's just exercising the enforcement of the Jewish court. So Amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, get Musab Yisrael Kedin Kasher. If a get is extracted by force properly, Kedin, in the right way, it's Kasher. Shalok Kedin, if it's done improperly, then it's Pasul, but Uposel. Even though it's a Pasul get, it's still Posel this woman to marry a Kohen. What is Kedin and Shekalotin? Din is when the husband is compelled to give in. The husband or wife are compelled to be divorced. Because there's a halakhic compelling reason to divorce. And we have that in the Mishnah and Subos. If they're in violation of certain things, then if there's a halakhic imperative to have them be divorced, that's kedin. If they voluntarily, or because they're not happy in the marriage, want a divorce, that's shalom kedin. Not meaning that it's not appropriate for them to get divorced, but not that they're not halakhically compelled to get divorced. It's a willful divorce. So that means that you can only use exert force to extract the get, right, when there's a halakhic imperative to have a get be given in this instance. When it's a willful get, meaning the get is only given because the parties want, or at least one party wants to get divorced, then the act cannot be muset, that cannot be a force to get. When it comes to non-Jews, kedin, even if they can extract the get, right, in a case where there's a halakhic imperative to give a get, pasul, the get is pasul posel, but it's still, it ruins her for the kahuna if she gets what she gets. Shalokin, if they do it in an instance where there is no law comparative, then I feel we have to get the angle. There's no get. We're not talking about it over here. So Mara says, Manusha. Let's understand about an Ovid Chachamim. Eob de Chachamim b'nei Asurin, who, if they can exert force, it's Bishurin Amlin Kasher. It should be a valid get. Elab b'nei Asurin, if they're not able to force a get out, Misaloli Pasel. It should not be a get at all. It's not a get at all. Why should it be Pasel de Gehuna? Meaning that either they work, Ovid Chachamim can work or can't work. How can you have a state in the middle where it says it doesn't work, it's posel, but it's still posel? It should be either the get's irrelevant or the get is valid. You know what I'm saying? So Amar Rav Misharshia, Dvar Torah, it's unbelievable. Mina Torah, get musag of the chumim kasher. A forced get by a non-Jew is kasher. Umatam amru pasul, shulay kolachad machad, olechad vatolet atzmah bo dechavim, umachad atzmah miyadala. Right? Because anytime a woman wanted a get, what would she do? She'd run away to either the non-Jewish courts or to the non-Jewish marauders or kings or enforcers or armies, and if she wanted to get a get, she'd get them to force her husband to give her a get. So it means that in order to extract the get, a woman would go run away to the non-Jews in order to get the get extracted. So in my sense, what are you going to do with the second half of the mitzvah? If it's good midoraisa, right, and then why shouldn't it line up with the din of a Jewish get? So we have a zera that it shouldn't work. But then when they do a shloka din, it should be just like the Yisrael shloka din, which is that even though it's pasul, nevertheless it's posel, it ruins it for the kuna. How come it ain't ready to get though at all? So the Gemara says, Nabi shloka din, ki Yisrael. So at least she should be posel the kuna. Mesharshia is a joke. So the question of why they did that, the Gemara discusses other places why they did that, why they did Talmidim, other reasons. It's not so clear that other Gemaras follow this line of reasoning of our Gemara, that it doesn't work, and there are other Gemaras that indicate that it might be, that Mesharshia is right, and that it does work me the right. So the time of night, so according to our Gemara, who says that Mesharshia is a beduta, what's the difference between a non-Jewish get that's forced and a Jewish get? It's kedin. When they do a kedin, when there's a lot of imperative and the goy does it, then it looks to kedin the Israel mikvah. It'll get mixed up with the Jewish get that is forced. Therefore, we say what? We say, go ahead, it's not a good get, but it's still posel the kahuna. So that people won't assume that when a Jewish gets given that case, that it's not a valid get. It is a valid get. But shalokedin, because then he saw the mikvah. Shalokedin by a goy is not going to get mixed up in a proper get that was done by a Jew. Oh, you say to me, wait, an improper get by a goy will get mixed up with an improper get of a Jewish get. So it should be the same. No, but why is the improper get that was forced improperly by a Jew, why is that pasul and posel? Why is it pasul and posel? That's only because of zera of a kedin. And if it was done properly, way that it is a dalit get. So then it will become a gzeira l'gzeira. And therefore, it only goes there by a non-Jewish get that was forced, kedin, when it was halachic imperative. That gets mixed up with the Jewish get that was done with halachic imperative, which is kosher. So therefore, we said that that is pasul, but mosel. Shalok kedin, a Jewish get that is done without a halachic imperative is what? Is pasul, right? And is posel. Why? Again, because it gets mixed up with a Jewish get that is done with a halachic imperative. But when you have a non-Jewish get without a halachic imperative, that's already too far removed to make a gzeira on that, and therefore it's in reach get both. There is no reach get in this. Right now, Abai Yashka said Rabbi Yosef, the Yotim become Musa Gita. He was forcing Gitin. Amalei Baha Anan and Yotos Anan. We're just simpletons, meaning that we live in Babel and we don't have smicha. And how can you go ahead? You're not a valid court that can go ahead and do this. Right? And we have Itanya. Hayar Rabbi Meir Omer, Pomakom Shatam, would say Uguriot Shel Ovdechamim. You find courts, non Jewish courts. Abakishidam Kidine Israel, even though they judge or their laws are the same as the Jewish law, yet Tarishel is a kickban. You can't use those courts instead of a Beitin. Shemar Beila Mishpatim Ashvetasim Lifnehem, Lifnehem, Velo Lifne Ovdechamim. That's what we're really after in the pasuk here, that the mishpatim, the Jewish law, must be executed by a Jewish court, not a non-Jewish court, and number two, not by a Jota, not by a non-smicha court. How do you get this limud? Rashi says that the limud is based on the fact that in Mukta Mamukhar Batorah, at the end of Parshat Mishpatim, in Perkov Dalit, at the end of Mishpatim, the Torah goes back and gives another description of Mamad Har Sinai at the end of Parakab Dalit. Rashi over there says that Tei Mukta Mamukhar Torah, that Parakab Dalit belongs before Mishpatim. And that description in Parakab Dalit, right, in Mishpatim, there the Torah talks about the Ayin Zakenim, the 70 Zakenim that went up with Moshe, and says, Ela Mishpatim, Mishra Tassim Lifnehem. So the Lifnehem is referencing, according to Rashi, that was at the end of Parakab Mishpatim, which is the 70 Zakenim and the Smuchim. Right, so that's good for Rashi. What about like the Ramban and others who don't learn the name of Dhammukhab and Torah? So Tosus already addresses that. He thinks that Rashi is not because he disputes Rashi's principle, aim of Dhammukhab and Torah, but he thinks the limud comes out of the fact that in that parsha of the Gemish Batim, it says the word Elohim many times, and over there Elohim is referring to a Dayan Mumcheh, and therefore Tassim Lifnehem means the Dayanim Mumchim, and not Hajiltot, and not Ovdei Kochavim. So Amalei, so he says back to them, Anan Shlichutayu Kavdina. We are doing the mission of those that are in Eretz Israel, meaning that they have smicha, and they have appointed us, or they make us their smicha to enforce here in Babel. So as we have a hotel, that is, because that's a similar din. How do we as courts enforce loans, right, and monetary matters here in Babel? We're doing it with the power vested to us by the courts in Eretz Israel. So Mar says, Yofi, Zelot v'chavalot nami. He says, what about Zelot v'chavalot? We should be able to force them. What? The Gemara's question here is a little problematic, only because we see in other places that they did do Zelot and Chavalot. Tosus goes explains it in a funny way. Might be Tnas. Might be the real thing. So we know that the Batei Dinim and Bavel did not execute on Tnas. So Kimmer says, Kiyav Dinim Shukutayu Vimilta Deshrifa. When they give us empowerment to enforce the Jew with the law when monetary matters, that's things that are commonplace. But in the case where it's not commonplace, there we are not their appointees, we're not their shluchim. So in this instance, the Tosus says from here, what do you do with Gerus? How do we do Gerus today? So he says that would be included under Shkia, things that are Shkia, even though the Gemara before said that Gerus is not Shkia, that he says Shkia, because that's Shkia enough that they were doing a shluchim. Come on. So we just want to read the Rambam, which is a very, very important Rambam, which explains why a get mehusa works. Why is a get that's done under force, under duress, why is it a good get? Meaning that a person has to give a get willingly, he has to do it of his own volition, and why does forcing him do anything for you? He says, Misha din notain, the kofin notel the garesha tisho, the lorat tel the garesha. Right, so it din notain, meaning that execution is halakhically, it's a halakhic imperative to force the get. He doesn't want to get it. Beizin shosnova koma koma kozman. Any Beizin Israel can do, makin oto, hachimar lutiami. He can force him until he says, I am willing to do it. Vif no get, who get kosher? He does it, it's a good get. Behemim kogoyim, and also if non Jews do this, Ramallah asim hachisom him lakha, Rablach latu oto Israel biyad goyim, hachigarish, harizeh kosher. Again, if a non Jewish enforcer is doing it with the instructions of a Jewish court, that also is a question we have, like our mission. We want Goyim Atzam, Atzam, and Zuot, Goyim by themselves do it, Hashkatav, until he writes it, Hova did nothing. Shechtav writes it Pasul. Since there's a law comparative, we said this is Pasul, all the Mepharshim and the Rambam have to deal with. What does that mean? Why is it here that it fails by a Goy? We're going to see in a second by a Goy. Why doesn't it work? What's the Rambam's reasoning, which we're going to see in a second? And so they all say that when the Goy is forcing him, he's doing it to protect himself and not to do what the halacha is. He's not trying to do the halacha, but rather to protect himself. Right, so since there's a lot of comparative to do it, right, then it's not, right, that's the problem here, it's part of the Rambam. I don't want to really spend a lot of time on it, but the first thing to speak on this, if I didn't know thing, goes back to the original didn't know thing. You tell me, even when there's a lot of comparative, nevertheless, when the going force it, right, here's get pasul, still get pasul. Why? So the easiest way to explain it is that when a non-Jew is forcing the Jew to do it, he's just trying to protect his life. He's trying to say, listen, I don't want to get hurt anymore, so I'm just going to give the get so I don't get hurt. Not because I want to give a get, not because that's what's Allah who ordained, but to protect myself. Like we saw earlier in the Sefta, when the secret law came and forced him to give up the land, to give the land so he wouldn't die, not because he really wanted to make a kinyan on the, to be mocked in the land. So now, Lama, why does it work? Lama batel get zeh. So again, this is the Rambam, Yopos Gerushin, Perfet, Halacha Kof, very famous Rambam. Zeh Hari Huanus, Ben Biyad Guim, Ben Biyad Yisrof. He's being forced. Why is this a valid get? You're only called forth when you do something that you're not obligated to do in the Torah. If you force somebody to sell something or to give something, then that is not, that is against his will. Someone who's overcome by his Yitzhara, to tell mitzvah, not to do a mitzvah, to do something wrong. He's whipped until he does what he's supposed to or obligated to do. He's poraged from this Yisur, Shasur Lasoto. This is not a Onis. This is not being forced. He is the one who forced himself to do wrong. The Anus is that he doesn't want to do the Torah. Bidato, Hara'ah, his evil thoughts or his evil inclinations. Possession or Tilakarish. This person doesn't want to divorce. My question will say the Yotam Yisrael. He wants to be a Jew. But who lets us call a mitzvot and he wants to do the mitzvot? So the Yitzvah Hekman Averot and distance himself from Averot. Yitzvah Hushim Tokon is overcome by his inclination to do the wrong thing in this instance. Kevitz Huka Achatashash Yisrael is hit. Not until his will gives up, but until the Yitzvah Hara gives up. Right? Amar Rutsiani, Kvar Gerush, Lirutsono. Then he is getting divorced according to his will. Right? So that, this is an unbelievable Rambam. So he says, right. Slimmer type idea. But Kovin Otovachimor Rotseani means that we are realigning your right proper disposition towards Torah law or your willingness to do Torah law. And that the real onus here is not the whipping to you to do it, but the fact that you're withholding from doing the Torah mitzvahs, that is the anus. Of course, in the Aseret Yemei Teshuva, of course, this is Musar Aska from the Rambam, that our inability to do the mitzvahs, our inability to do our mitzvahs, as we always have excuses and reasons for that, and the Rambam says, that's anus. That's what we're being forced by the Yetzer Hara, and that our real will and our real ratzon is to realign and to be, do the Torah mitzvot, the properly the Torah mitzvot, and that we have to be maser all the anusim in order that we realign ourselves with which is truly inside of us, which is the willingness and the wanting to do Torah mitzvot. Okay, we'll stop over here.